This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Well, the transfer window is about to shut, and this is the last weekend of matches before that indeed happens. Plenty of action all over Europe, including Liverpool's need to really get it going as they host Bournemouth. We got Juventus against Roma, that's the Paulo Dybala derby, Lazio, Inter, La Liga, Bundesliga, and so much more. Michael Lahoud is here. Jonathan Johnson is here. Que golazo, our weekend preview begins right now. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Que Golazo. Thank you so much for being part of the family. We have now passed 21,000 subscribers on YouTube. Thank you so much on behalf of the entire family. We appreciate you. Que Golazo Pod on Twitter. Welcome to our weekend preview, arguably our best, some say. And I don't really disagree with that. Disclaimer, by the way, we're recording this before the Champions League draw, which, by the way, is a live watch along with us as well. But you can rewatch it, of course. But we're recording this before that happens. But if you can catch all our reaction on the pod and YouTube feeds, please do so. Michael Lahoud, how are you, buddy?
I'm glowing. Still glowing off the Manchester United win. And, you know, who needs Champions League when you got Europa League, baby? Europa League winners, hopefully. But don't want to get ahead of myself. We still got Southampton at the weekend. So we'll see.
Step by step, my friend. Step by step. Jonathan Johnson, how are you, buddy?
Yeah, doing very well, thanks. Obviously boosted by the midweek win over Bolton. I was sweating it before the game, sweating it even more when we went 1-0 down, but the boys came good. So I've managed to stave off depression for another couple of days until West Ham visit Villa Park.
Yeah, JJ, I was just telling the boys before you joined how, like, when we went 1-0 down to Bolton, Villa Twitter is basically that Elmo gif when he's in hell and everybody just wants to go. That's literally what happens. But to your point, I'm so glad that we got a victory. But hey, JJ, not to worry. Death, taxes, Manchester United and the Carabao Cup. That's great, isn't it?
Honestly, absolutely crazy. I mean, they must have been listening to Que Golazo and wanted a bit more of that beef with Mike Lahoud. But I mean, the thing is, you can guarantee we're going to get them in the FA Cup as well. So yeah, exactly. anybody who's, you know, looking for the smart money, if you want to bet on the cup draws, definitely put a bit of cash on Villa getting United in the league and FA Cup. I mean, it's just written.
It's ridiculous. The Villa team have a 50% off on the local bed and breakfast. That's how often we go to all
I mean, the thing is, we're joking about it, but I know that there's a Twitter thread somewhere. I can't remember where it was. We've even discussed it before. Honestly, like the number of times Villa have drawn
it's United. Like, I think it's like seven out of the last nine or so. Anyway, non-Villa fans are so angry at us. Michael Lahoud right now. Des Norris is like, shut up about Villa. Let's talk. Oh, we can preview, baby.
I just want to make this point.
The easy way out of this is just to give us our own weekly Villa Ramcast.
I just want to make this point with Villa. I just really hope that the pigeon who took a dump in Ashley Young's mouth comes back for this game. That's the derby of that pigeon. I want that pigeon to show up because that'll tell me that's a good omen for United. If not, all bets are off.
Absolutely. But anyway, welcome everybody to our weekend preview. We're going to do something different to begin with, actually. Plenty of Premier League chatter, La Liga, Serie A, of course, and much more, but we wanted to do something a little different. Yours truly, JJ and Mike, we're going to nominate our one must-watch games of the weekend. And we're going to feature any of the top five leagues. These are the games that we feel are the matches that are really worthy of your attention. And we'll go anywhere in Europe for this. Jonathan Johnson, I give you the mic first. What game are you selecting, my friend?
Oh, man, you're living dangerously there. Well, I'm going to go with the easy choice for me, and it's the game that I'm going to be at this weekend. So Parc des Princes for PSG against Monaco. And I guess the thing that I feel makes it the most interesting is we thought we were going to see PSG tested against Lille last week. Obviously, that wasn't the case. Monaco, though, really have started the season quite slowly compared to how they would have hoped. And I think they cannot really afford to put a foot wrong in the capital. If they can come away with a draw, I think that would be, you know, considered a positive result, you know, and I think PSG as well, it's going to be a good test for them to see sort of how they do now that they're just expected to go out there and stick five past a team, especially some of the better teams in the league as well. For my money, Monaco are a better side than Lille, despite their slow start to the season, you know, but we'll see how they handle the occasion at Parc des Princes this weekend.
JJ, looking at this matchup last season, it was a blockbuster run-in towards the end of the season and a shock result going towards Monaco. Do you think they can pull off the theatrics and the heroics of last season?
It's a good question, and I really hope that they can rediscover that form sometime soon. But, you know, I think Monaco are one of those strange teams, especially at the moment, where they almost need to be put under pressure to produce that kind of form, that kind of run. I don't know if the pressure has built up to that point yet. I know that a lot of people have started talking about the likes of Monaco, the likes of Nice starting the season slowly compared to expectations. But, you know, I do think they really need to rediscover that form, not necessarily because of what's going on in Ligue 1 at the moment. I still think that they have a good shot at finishing as the best of the rest behind PSG. But I think the bigger worry would be how Monaco do in the Europa League, because being one of France's stronger teams, you know, there is a real need for them to perform well on the continental stage this year. And I think that they could have done better in the Europa League last season than where they finished, didn't even get sort of to the quarterfinal stage. And I think a deep run in the Europa League and a good finish, Champions League qualification would be a successful season for Monaco. And obviously, the sooner they get into their stride, the better for that. You know, I think Philippe Clément is a good coach. And I don't think that it was any accident that they managed to string together that kind of form at the end of last season. I just feel like they almost need like the fire lit underneath them a little bit to, you know, to really get going.
So very quickly, JJ, before we move on, obviously we mentioned that these are the last matches before the transfer window shuts until again it reopens in January. PSG looking to, you know, get some more ins, get some more outs. How's the club looking before the window shuts?
It's more a question of who PSG can get out before they can bring anyone in. You've got Keylor Navas on the verge of joining Napoli, Ander Herrera expected to join Athletic Club. You've got Levin Kazawa to Fulham transfer rumours, which, you know, PSG have kind of been praying for a taker for Kazawa for quite some time. You've got a couple of other players who could leave. We'll see. I know that our friend of the show, Fabrizio Romano, was talking about Sunderland's interest in Edouard Michu as well. So, you know, there's plenty of possibilities. Villa even linked with Abdou Diallo as well. I'm not sure if that one will come off or not. Let's see. I mean, there's definitely some kind of interest there. But, you know, I think if PSG can move a couple on, they'll definitely look to bring in one, maybe two. Fabian Ruiz ready to make that move, you know, whenever PSG have the financial capabilities ready to complete on it. So, you know, definitely keep an eye on PSG because there is a lot of pressure internally to try and push out these undesirable players, your Idrissa Gueye, your Mauro Icardis, those kind of guys.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Just looking at this matchup, JJ, PSG offensively looking like a juggernaut, but defensively, they've been known to have some frailties against this Monaco team. This season's team, where are they lacking most, and how do you think Monaco can get after them?
I mean, I think, you know, PSG definitely need to be tested defensively. We've seen that they're not perfect in preseason and in some of the games early on so far this campaign. I mean, Montpellier managed to score two at Parc des Princes. You know, Lille did still manage to score against them last week as well. So, you know, I do think that it's a question of time really before PSG come up against a team with the offensive tools to be able to harm them. And Monaco are one of those teams in, you know, Ligue 1 who could pose them problems. You know, they have some quality all over the pitch, especially going forward when you've got guys like Wissam Ben Yedder who knows how to find the back of the net. So, you know, it will be interesting. And I think if they can, manage to score, say, first against PSG, if they take them by surprise, then it really will set the cat amongst the pigeons. And it'll be interesting to see how PSG pick themselves up and react to that.
I'll tell you what's one more exciting fixture in Ligue 1, and I know that we're doing one game to watch, but I wanted to just bring this one up because Nice against Marseille is an interesting one. And also, you know, game aside, I just want to add this little thing, JJ. You set the Marseille fan base crazy this week. And even when I asked Fabrizio Romano, he was, surprised by it and he was going to look more into it and stuff. But my friend, Cristiano Ronaldo to Marseille. Can you imagine the scenes if this happened?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those weird ones where it's cropped up. It's gained a bit of traction, on social media at the moment. It seems like a very improbable move, but also at the same time, I mean, when you bear in mind sort of what Ronaldo is looking for, you know, in terms of an exit door from Old Trafford, there are not that many options left out there. I mean, he's passed on the opportunity to go back to Sporting for the moment, and Marseille is a huge club. But they're a team who I think will struggle in the Champions League this season. They're in transition under a new coach, Igor Tudor, who's falling out with some of the current star players. You've got Milik, who's on the verge of returning to Italy. You've got Dimitri Payet, who is not in his best physical form, and is already having problems with Tudor. You know, if they could find the money, and obviously Ronaldo would have to take a massive pay cut as well to make it happen. It is, I guess, something that could be sort of feasible in the very short term. I mean, you'd have to think that it probably doesn't make the most sense to Marseille sort of beyond one season, but also at the same time, sort of the jolt that it would give, the club, and a club that really needs, little to get the crowd going as well at Stade Vélodrome. It would be hugely exciting. And obviously, if Ronaldo was to pitch up in Marseille, you'd have the return of the CR7 Lionel Messi battle going head to head in Ligue 1. But I think for me at this moment in time, I think too much would probably have to realistically happen in Marseille, in order to get into the position to bring Ronaldo in. And I don't think there's enough time left in the transfer window. Would be fantastic, for Ligue 1 to have another superstar, come and join the mix. But I think this is definitely still in the fantasy realm at this moment in time, no matter how desperate Mendes and Ronaldo are getting in trying to move him away from Old Trafford.
Well, speaking of how to sell this to Ronaldo, and speaking of Nice Marseille, just give him a mansion in the south of France, give him another one off in the next. I'm sure it can work out. He's just going to make it work. Absolutely right. All right. Well, these are our games to watch. JJ has given PSG against Monaco. He'll be at that game. I'm going to go to Serie A, which you can exclusively watch on Paramount Plus and CBS Sports. And this is a tasty one, boys. Juventus against Roma. Allegri against Jose Mourinho. Roma in third, Juventus in fourth. Obviously, it's very early in the season. This is match day 3. But I think you can tell a few narratives here. I mean, this is definitely the Paolo Di Bala derby right now as he faces his former club. But there are some intriguing storylines. For one, Juventus is missing a few key players. We've already talked about Paul Pogba, Chiesa, of course, Angel Di Maria. We're not sure if he's going to be available for this one. And on the other side, Roma look good. They look ready. They look confident. Fair play. They only, with all due respect, had to have a one-away victory against Cremonese in the previous game. Juventus couldn't get a goal against Sampdoria. So, we still have a lot to see from both these sides. But I would say, Mike Lahoud, that Juventus-Roma should be hopefully an intriguing matchup, if anything, because you have two fiery, confident, demanding managers on the touchlines. What do you think?
Last time these two teams met up, remember the scoreline? 4-3. It was stellar. I mean, you had defenders scoring goals, then getting red cards in the same kick, if you will. And when I look at this matchup, I think this matchup comes at the right time for both of these teams to give a jolt in whoever wins this match's season and really make them the title contenders or the team that everyone is wondering, can they be? And we'll start with Roma. Roma, they've won their first two matches, but they haven't really gotten going offensively. It's not for a lack of creating chances. Last game against Cremonese, 27 shots, 12 on target. Tammy Abraham, It's just not happening for him yet. Last season, it was Hendrik Mkhitaryan who was carrying the team. And then within the first three games, Abraham getting off the mark. They need Abraham to hit. Paulo Dybala, he needs to hit. He's that playmaking role. What better way, what better game to show up than against your former employers? And you know he is going to be jacked and juiced up for this game. I think this is actually a trap game for the likes of a Juventus because Mourinho will have Roma ready to go. It's almost like someone who's got the pit bulls in the back and just been starving him, starving Dybala, starving Abraham.
It's the DMX
ready to
front
go.
Cover, Michael. It's the DMX front cover. That's what it is.
Yeah. No, but on the Juve side, this is really the injury derby, just key names. And imagine how much bigger of a game this would be. It's already a big game. But imagine if all those players, when they get healthy or if they are healthy, this would be one of the games of the season around Europe already.
Yeah, I mean, I think this one for me, it feels like it's got 1-0 Roma written all over it. You've got 2-1-goal victories already for Jose Mourinho's side. And, you know, this Juve team, you know, really still struggling to get going. I mean, they took so long to move up through the gears last season. And it seems like, you know, for the mentions, the reasons that Mike already mentioned, they're also going to be quite slow burners this season as well. You know, perhaps, you know, they might get moving up the table a bit faster and not sort of be left straggling behind in the same way that they did last campaign. But this kind of game is the sort of match that they really need to pick up the points in so that they don't fall behind, you know, the early season pace setters. Because Roma, I think with the performances we've seen already so far this season, they're going to be very pragmatic. I mean, you look at what Mourinho, you know, was able to do last season, you know, getting it, tasting a bit of success in Europe, giving the Roma fans something they haven't had for quite some time. And I think now the objective for Mourinho is going to be to move Roma back into sort of Champions League qualification territory, you know, perhaps snatching an Italian Cup success, and, you know, also, you know, starting to be, you know, one of the really difficult teams to beat for some of those other bigger sides, because the sort of gap between them and some of the leading lights last season was fairly big by the end of the campaign. But I think they're going to run them a lot tighter this season. I think I already tipped in a podcast a few weeks ago Roma to win the Coppa Italia. So for me, I think that Mourinho's men are
you do other podcasts, Jonathan Johnson?
No, with you guys. I remember it with Mike.
I thought you said it somewhere else. I was like,
it was when you were on your sabbatical.
Oh, that's
no. Okay. So quick shout out to you, JJ, Sky Sports. You are cheating on us for a good reason. You better be giving us all shout outs saying how
Paris
funny we are, how great we are.
Paris ain't cheap, Michael.
No. We'll be finding out soon. But when I look at Juventus, who would have thought that they'd be depending solely on Serbian attackers? They're arguably their two most potent attackers right now. Filip Kostic coming in, new signing, and Dusan Vlahovic. They've done it for Serbia. They will need to do it for Juventus while these injuries get healthy. And when I think of Kostic, him in particular, Vlahovic will be dependent on his wing play in this game because he's the one player that looks like he just has that bit of extra something about him, that bit of dynamic play needed, that big of wing play that could unlock back lines. And against Sampdoria, he came close. And for a new player being thrust into the proceedings and really having that sort of impact, I think of Moises Keane as well. Could he get a start? He looked really good in preseason. This is the type of game where Allegri will have to outcoach Mourinho if Juventus are going to get anything out of this game, because I think Roma has the edge going into it.
Yeah, and Angel Di Maria's absence, of course, will be key. Juventus has this matchup historically in 34 head-to-head encounters between both of these sides. Juve holds a clear advantage. They're 21 games, lost 8 and drawn 5. But momentum goes towards Jose Mourinho and Roma. So that's a good one. Michael Ahoud, talk to us about your game of the week, baby.
Well, I was tempted to go United, so I gave him the shout before we even got into the deep end. I'm going to go to just the teams that are there's breaking hearts of the top six and taking names so far. Brighton versus Leeds. Not think I would ever be saying neither of those two names. One, Leeds, I have to say it. Well, quick shout out. My Irish dad's in town. He's a big Leeds fan, and he's converted my wife to Elites fans. She's never been to Ellen Road. Don't even think she knows or cares where Ellen Road is. But in this household, that's why the scarf is there. And that's why I'm talking about it, because I got to, because I got to, because I got to. But with regard to this game, I love this game because how well both teams started. Both teams have a clear identity on how they play. Leeds United coming off 3-0 massive victory. Jesse Marsh has this high-pressing, high-octane team revved up and ready to go. Now, let's flip it to the road form of this Leeds team. They're going to be tested going up against a Brighton team that's well-coached by Graham Potter, and we talked about this at the weekend recap. This is a team who knows who they are. They've been consistent. They have a core group, and I think that front three and even the midfield two of McAllister and Caicedo, that is the engine room of this Brighton team. And on the counter, whichever team wins the battle of the counterattack will win this game. And if Danny Welbeck, if he leaves a Superman cape at home, Brighton will struggle. If he continues to re-up on the big S on his chest and the big Welbeck on the back of his jersey, Brighton will win. And for Leeds United, Brendan Aaronson, hey, the Americans have to hit. But now you have depth in the League Cup, EFL Cup, if you will. Got to be on brand. Sinisterra getting goals. Mateus Klich getting goals. They need bench players to arrive and compete because, as you know, when you press and you're running and running, you're going to run out of gas at some point. And this could be the back-and-forth counterattack derby where a bench player comes on and changes and wins the game for someone.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, this one, I mean, it has the makings of sort of one of those underrated clashes. You know, I don't think any of us would have predicted that. I think are both in the top five or at least in the top six based on results.
Leeds is third, Brighton is fifth. So, you know, this is a Champions League competition right now.
Exactly. It's an early season European six-pointer. Yeah. So, no, I mean, the thing for me is I think given their business over the summer, I think many people expected Leeds to be much better than they were last season. The interesting thing is looking at their business over the summer, many people expected Brighton to be a lot worse than they have been so far. It's almost like they've been flying under the radar because of their lack of activity. I know that they picked up Estupiñán recently and they've been linked with a number of other players as well. You know, so I imagine that there will be some faces in between now and the end of the transfer window. But I guess, you know, for Brighton, the concern would be that maybe there's not that much sort of quality and depth in the group. So perhaps as long as they can make the most of their good form, kind of similar to last season, you know, this is without knowing if they'll make any moves, you know, in the next week or so. So I think while they're at it, this one sort of for me feels like it's going to be quite evenly pegged. Wouldn't surprise me if it's a draw, say a score draw. You know, but I do think it is, you know, it's one of those exciting Premier League matches that you don't necessarily expect to be exciting. You know, when you look at it on paper, you're like, well, okay, maybe it's not the sexiest matchup, but actually it's one of those that ends up turning into, you know, one of the more absorbing contests.
Yeah, JJ, I agree with you like 99.9% of the time. I think I'm going to disagree slightly here in terms of Brighton going under the radar. I think that for a while now, they have shown the entire Premier League what they're all about. They may not be money-centric and they may not have flashy players. I mean, clearly they don't really have like a superstar, right? But they're a very well-run club and they're so good at business. I think like the fact that you replaced Cucurella with Pervis Estupiñán is incredible. The fact that Moises Caicedo is living up to the hype that their own scouts have produced is amazing. I do agree with you, though, that depth is a problem for this Brighton side. And it will be interesting to see what happens to this Brighton side, you know, Christmas or, you know, January after the World Cup, etc. Especially like if some of those players get hurt in the World Cup. So you have to be smart there. This particular fixture is, Mike, like you said, it's just two really well-coached teams, eager. To your point, JJ, like they're fighting for Europe at this point. I don't care how early it is. That's literally what's happening right now. But Brighton have won 8 of their last 11 league matches against Leeds, although last season, both of them ended level. So there is kind of a toss-up in this situation. You don't know what it is. So I think Brighton will come out victorious here just because I think Leeds are much better at Ellen Road than they are away from home. And they get a little bit too vulnerable, especially off the ball. But Jesse Marsh has them better than when Bielsa was coaching them in terms of that specific thing. But no doubt about it, this is a great game. Two fantastic managers. I have so much time for Graham Potter. And Jesse Marsh is a personal friend of mine. I love this matchup. I hope it's a great one to see. Des Norris, show those fixtures from the Premier League on screen. Let's focus a little bit on the Premier League here. Southampton open everything at home to Manchester United. Michael Lahoud, Manchester United. Brentford to Everton. Brighton against Leeds. We've mentioned Chelsea need to face Leicester City. Reports already from Fabrizio Romano that Wesley Fofana will not feature here. Mm. He's pushing that move to those opponents. Liverpool against Bournemouth. We're going to talk about Liverpool in a second, guys. Man City against Crystal Palace. That's an intriguing one. And Arsenal and Fulham North against West London, of course, right there. And then on Sunday, Villa against West Ham. We will not mention it, Jonathan Johnson, because all these stats are going to come in left, right, and center. Have West Ham haven't scored a goal and blah, blah, blah. Welcome to Villa Park. Wolves against Newcastle. Nottingham Forest. City ground against Tottenham and Antonio Conte. But before we get into anything that you wanted to talk about, just very quickly on Liverpool here, Jonathan Johnson and Mike, you chime in. You know, Mike and I had a chat way before the season started, and we were like, you know, Liverpool are Liverpool. Fantastic. Jurgen Klopp, you can't deny how good of a manager he is. But they're one or two injuries away from being a little worrying in terms of fighting for this title, let alone a top four race. And right now I feel that that's showing. I know it's early, but it's not going to get easier if they don't bring anybody else in. Thiago Alcantara is hurt. I just feel that that midfield is a little worrying for me. And then when you have somebody like Darwin Nunez suspended because of a red card. Anyway, Bournemouth at home, you would expect 3 points. But I guess the overall question to you, JJ, is what are your thoughts of Liverpool? And what are your thoughts of Liverpool in the next few months? Is it more of an urgency than you think?
It's a good question because, I mean, I think there's so much about Liverpool that's kind of changing at the moment as well. You've got that dynamic switching up front. You've got Nunez coming in, obviously having to, you know, to find his feet in the Premier League. But Sadio Mane is a difficult act to follow in that Liverpool attack. So I think it's going to take time, you know, for them to get used to him not being there anymore and not playing in that same way. I also think there's a few players in the Liverpool squad now who, you know, their positions have to be considered. You know, they sound like there are some issues around Naby Keita. James Milner looks like he's playing on one season too long. And I think it's not the first time I've seen people noting that about him as well. And it almost kind of feels like, you know, Liverpool perhaps could have done with sort of one extra body of quality in midfield in particular, because you mentioned how injury prone Thiago Alcantara is as well, you know, as opposed to sort of three guys where, you know, there are limits. I mean, Thiago's a fantastic player when he's fit. The question is, how often will he be fit? Milner, you know, if we accept that sort of Premier League or playing at the very highest level now for a Premier League side is beyond him. And then Naby Keita is kind of, you know, in and out of the side so often, you know, he obviously needs to perhaps take a step down, but to be playing more regularly. And it's almost like, you know, Liverpool could perhaps trade in sort of two of those three guys and bring in sort of one player of real quality that they could rely on, and then they'd be a lot better set. I mean, I think once Nunez gets over sort of the culture shock of the style of play in the Premier League, he'll be absolutely fine. You know, the guy's a baller. You know, he's a beast in front of goal. I don't have any doubts that he will be prolific. You know, for the Reds, just unfortunate sort of the way that, you know, the first couple of weeks have gone for him in the Premier League. But no, I mean, I don't think long term that I have too many worries about Liverpool. Yeah. The only thing I would say is that, you know, Jurgen Klopp's sort of pity act does, you know, wear thin, you know, a bit too often. I mean, I love him, fantastic coach, but you know, if anyone is adept at playing the world's smallest violin,
you can say it. He
often
whinges too much.
It is definitely Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah, I'm just, hold on a sec, guys. Looking at my phone. No Liverpool fans texting me because they're crap right now. They're crap, and I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. I was texting. Oh, I was just doing this quick sidebar. I was texting one of my good friends, Seth B. Rao, because I'm not going to say the word on this show. You know, I don't cuss, but the B is a cuss word for his name in this moment, because it is that word. It's bull poop. It's bull poop, Seth. I'm calling you out. He said, it's a long season. Don't worry. It's a long season. You want to know why that's worrying for Liverpool? Because the World Cup is coming and you already have injury problems. The games aren't going to get easier and the stakes aren't going to get any lower. This is a team that you need to get some healthy bodies, and you need to get a new physio, if you will. What are these guys doing off the field? Is it the training load? Is it the way Klopp and his team plays and that heavy metal, high pressing football? There has to be a plan B for Liverpool because it's taking its toll. In the last three seasons, we're having an injury crisis, two out of the last three seasons. When this team is healthy, they are firing on all cylinders. It's beautiful to watch. They're scary to watch. And when I look in the midfield, one positive note for them, though, Fabinho coming back. The difference between Liverpool winning the Champions League and not last season was the health of Fabinho just making it over the line. And I think a healthy and good Fabinho down the stretch, I think they would have won the Champions League. Although Madrid, they were the Cinderella story, and the glass slipper seemed to fit just right for them. Maybe nothing could have stopped them in the end. But Fabinho is the heart of that midfield, and they need to keep this guy healthy. And maybe you save him for just the big games, because he's going to have the biggest part to play in that midfield this season if they're going to salvage anything out of it.
Kind of like a halfway house between like an observation and a question for you guys. There's been a lot made about Trent Alexander-Arnold, not just this season so far, but last season as well, sort of his deficiencies defensively, because obviously we know he's a great talent going forward and he's very important to that Liverpool team. But when they're suddenly under the cosh, it's strange. Like when Liverpool get pressed and do what they do best, and somebody's doing it against them, they seem to really, struggle. And one of the players who struggles most with that is Trent Alexander-Arnold. Is that going to be a concern, do you think, moving forward for Klopp, or is that something that he can remedy, or is it just as simple as Liverpool sort of finding their feet again, getting back to playing the way that they're used to, and that sort of alleviates some of the pressure on Trent? I'll send that one to LME first.
Well, actually, I was going to give it to Mike first, but I can go first. It's fine. Listen, here's what I think. When Liverpool's system is such that when it goes well, your Trent Alexander-Arnolds are going to be usually the biggest benefactors because they're pushing so high up the pitch and most of the deliveries coming from that side. It's not a surprise why Trent Alexander-Arnold did so well from an assist perspective last season. I think when things are not going well for Liverpool, usually it's their off-the-ball problems, and that's where Trent Alexander-Arnold really kind of just fades away a little bit. I'm not pinpointing so much on him. I think he's clearly one of the best right backs in the world. I mean, he's almost created a new type of formula for the right wing back. But when things are not going the way that you want them to, when you gegenpress and when you play that sort of heavy metal football, then usually the players that suffer the most are the ones that have to run the most miles and the ones that have to create most chances. And that's Andy Robertson on one side, and that's Trent Alexander-Arnold on the other one. Sometimes I feel that Liverpool's biggest problem is that their plan A is so good that they really forget that they really should have a plan B. Sometimes you're not going to win heavy metal. I mean, you can see it already three matches in. I have no doubt that they're going to be fine. I have more questions about, like, can you be a legitimate contender for the Champions League and the Premier League again with this squad? Because you're going to need, I feel, a little bit more. To Mike Lahoud's point, thank God Egypt is not at the World Cup, because, like, there's going to be a few players that are missing. Trent Alexander-Arnold, I feel like, happens to be just one of those players that when things are not going well with the Liverpool system, he is the one that really showcases a lot why it isn't happening.
When I look at Liverpool, I'm reminded of before, I think it was 2019, they were doing it in the Champions League, but the league, it was wishy-washy, and they still had a very great season that season. But Jurgen Klopp figured it out. Maybe it was 2018. I think the one they lost to Madrid, it was some year, I think 2018, if my numbers right.
Yeah.
And he figured it out and said, you know what? We are going to be difficult to play against. I'm going to trust that we're going to score goals, but we're going to get back to being difficult to play against. Heavy metal football works, and when it works on its day, we can beat anyone, City included. But defensively, he shored it up. He got reinforcements at the back. Virgil van Dijk comes in, they look like world beaters. And I think of that partnership in the middle, the two center backs, Joe Gomez, Joel Matip, they need to keep it simple. You have one of the best center backs in the world who's not in form right now. One of those center backs needs to step up and just know that Trent's going to push up, Robertson's going to push up, and they need to just be honest and cognizant of the transition. Teams are filtering into that space whenever Trent vacates it. Teams are making it super obvious. United flooded their left-hand side. a lot of attacks came down that left-hand side.
Yeah, which is my point, right? Which is my point. When they're not doing well, usually the focus point is on the most vulnerable side. So when you put all that left side on Trent Alexander-Arnold, it's clearly easy to see, well, you're going to struggle because of that. Look, we're talking a lot about Liverpool. They're probably going to win like 5-0 this weekend.
But please tell me that you guys saw that Oasis tweet that went viral of Van Dijk. I'm a huge fan of Van Dijk, but that cracked me up.
If you don't know about it, please check it out because it is very, very funny. But anyway, the question is, can Liverpool get that Premier League title from Manchester City and win the Champions League and be a legitimate threat? Right now, I have question marks. All right, we're going to take a break, everybody. When we come back, Serie A, La Liga chatter, because Real Betis, Jonathan Johnson doing well. Bundesliga, Bayern Munich, let's see how many goals they'll score this weekend. Some final thoughts, and that will be it. Qué Golazo, our weekend preview. Michael Lahoud, Jonathan Johnson, LME, we'll be right back.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Tailored Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Tailored Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Tailored Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Tailored Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Tailored Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBSSports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBSSports. So start your business journey today with Tailored Brands.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Qué Golazo. Thank you so much for being here. Michael Lahoud, Jonathan Johnson. Calling all soccer fashionistas, by the way. The Qué Golazo merch store is live. So now you can rep your favorite podcast YouTube channel wherever you go. Get 20% off all Qué Golazo merch by using the code GOLASO20. Link in the description. Or if you're watching on YouTube, scan the QR code in the top right corner. They don't have snapbacks yet, but I'm working on it, I promise. But make sure that you check it out as well. All right, Serie A, we talked about Juventus-Roma. Let's talk about Lazio-Inter, by the way. And Paramount Plus, by the way, is the only place to stream every minute of every Serie A match. Michael Lahoud, Lazio-Inter. This one's tasty, no?
And I think it comes at a good time for both teams. It comes at a good time for Inter. For them to really flex their muscles, they got off the mark, just comprehensive 3-0 win last match. Romelu Lukaku is hitting, and him, Lautaro Martinez, there is question over whether they would rekindle their form. Check. Ivan Perisic, that loss doesn't seem to impact them as much, although I think that we will see that tested more when they play bigger teams, and in this game, that will be tested. But Denzel Dumfries, a player who's looking good, this is a scary, good Inter team. And for Lazio, offensively, Immobile scores, but they just haven't gotten going yet under Maurizio Sarri in this young and early season. This is more of a trap game for Inter, and a game where if Lazio can get the 3 points, it would boost their season, and they would be a surprise participant in that title conversation.
Yeah, it definitely feels like there's something missing from Lazio that prevents them from playing, you know, the Sarri ball style that we associated with him from his time at Napoli, you know, and what he tried to do with Chelsea as well and Juve. You know, it seemed like such a good fit when it first happened, and, you know, the results sort of haven't really sort of followed just yet. You know, perhaps they do pick up, but it's been a fairly slow start to the season. I mean, it's... they beat Bologna by a goal, and then they were held by Torino. Perhaps that speaks more of Torino sort of strengthening themselves and sort of looking to move up back into the top half of the table. But I mean, for me, I think that Lazio definitely have the quality to hurt Inter, but Inter sort of, I expected them to do really, to almost have this kind of start to the season last season. And last season they started the, you know, the campaign like a house on fire, and then they slowed down mid-season. And I'm curious to know sort of if they're then going to, you know, really sort of step it up sort of between now and Christmas. I mean, they, you know, they definitely still have a lot of quality, but like you said, you know, it is a potentially a trap game, you know, because when you come up against a team with of the quality of a Lazio, especially when you have, you know, such a goal threat like Immobile, you know, you can get caught out. But I think Inter will shade this, and long term, I'm sort of wondering really if Sarri and Lazio maybe is not going to work out the way people expected.
Yeah, might be a tough one. And Inter Milan just have to keep on trucking, as obviously the Champions League also comes into play and their schedule will get busier. But as I mentioned, as you know, remember that Paramount Plus is the only place to stream every minute of every Serie A match. And you can quickly and easily sign up for your very own account right now with a free 1 month trial by going to ParamountPlus.com/Italy. Just click the try it free button and use promo code Italy for instant access to the best Italian club soccer available across all of your devices. Visit ParamountPlus.com/Italy and start streaming today. All right, from Italy to España, let's talk La Liga. JJ, Real Betis, Osasuna normally wouldn't be like the headlining talking point, but you know, both teams are doing fantastic. I know it's early, but they look great. Talk to me about this Real Betis side and how they host Osasuna. Both started very, very well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this one. I mean, I was hoping that the Betis would be able to get it done last week. Borja Iglesias, you know, in form in front of goal so far this season. And it just feels like the right moment, you know, for them, you know, to make such a strong start. They've got so much promise. I mean, I know they've still got issues to work out within the squad in terms of registering all their summer signings. But, you know, this Betis side, it feels like, you know, the core has been building now under Pellegrini for a while. And the only thing that was really missing from them and just sneaking into the Champions League last season was not dropping points in some of the matches that, you know, they're avoiding dropping points in at the moment so far this season. You know, Mallorca away, Elche at home, it's the kind of games where they would have dropped points last season. So if they can actually pick up the points here this season, certainly at the beginning of the campaign, you know, while everyone's still finding their feet, you know, I think that really bodes well, because I think Betis are going to be a problem again for some of these bigger sides. And I think we've had this conversation a couple of times before, you know, when, you know, a lot of us are not convinced, you know, that all of the big boys are going to be firing on all cylinders so far this season. I mean, look at Atleti down in ninth at the moment. I mean, I know it's only been two games, but, you know, there are, you know, sort of signs that, you know, perhaps all is not quite as well with Atleti. We'll see how that sort of pans out. But Betis, I think, definitely have the quality to break into the top four. You know, and it's fantastic just to see how this feel-good factor, you know, that surrounds the team is really enduring at this moment in time.
Don't sleep on this Osasuna team, though. 10th place last season, and they do what they do well. Two banks of four, 4-4-2, and they tee it up for their two strikers, Avila and Oros.
Beautiful. We're good on the counter. Simplicity is the ultimate sophistication.
Love it. Look at first place Villarreal. They keep it super simple, and it works a lot of times, especially in a league like La Liga where it's eccentric. There's tactics. It's that and the Bundesliga are probably the two biggest leagues that focus on tactics. And Serie A is number one, and then those two are tied.
Yeah, I would say La Liga is the technique centric league, right? The one where like players know exactly what they're doing, and it's kind of a painting to watch every time. But to your point, though, Mike, Osasuna, you know, they showed glimpses of why they're not a joke here. They can do some things. Can they get it done against the Real Betis side, to JJ's point, that really have already said and knocked on the door of not just European glory, but hopefully Champions League in the future?
It'll be really interesting to watch. I think Real Betis, their attack is super potent, and Nabil Fekir is playing out of his mind right now. I fully expect him, in the form that he's in, he should be on the plane to Qatar for the World Cup, because the French national team are going to need a player like him in games where it's close, tight. He can come off the bench. He might be able to pip Antoine Griezmann to a starting position. That would be a headline grabber, and we will be talking about it here on Kegel Lasso. promo. But for Betis, I think if he can hit, he is a supply line to the likes of the Iglesiases. He is the heart of that team. He is the crowning jewel of Pellegrini's project right now. And for Osasuna, can you keep him quiet? Can you keep that those two banks of four? Can you just tighten it that much more so a star-studded player like that doesn't have room to operate? Whichever team imposes their will on the game, and for Osasuna, if it's a low-scoring game, then that helps them out much more because they can grind it out. For Betis, if they get that first goal, then it could be lights out for Osasuna.
Yeah, Borja Iglesias already with 3 goals in La Liga. Juanmi, though, by the way, he already has 2 as well. And I'm just so happy for Manuel Pellegrini. He's already showing his class all over. He's showing his class right now. I'm not usually happy for Chileans, but I'm very happy for him, definitely. All right, let's move on here. Let's see. Let's talk some Bundesliga. Bayern Munich. I mean, even Sadio Mane is saying, no, you know what? Like, we've scored too many. I think, like, it's enough. This team is ridiculous. And now they're facing Gladbach. Michael Hood, what do you expect from Bayern Munich this weekend?
I think it's whatever Bayern want to do. It's Bayern's world in the Bundesliga, and everyone else is just living in it. But I want to take you back to last year. I think it was the first or second game of the Bundesliga season. Bayern Munich looked very average against this Gladbach team. Gladbach is a team that starts the Bundesliga season well in the last 2 seasons, if you will. And they have some good young talent. I think Marcus Thuram up top, and they've switched from a back three to a 4-2-3-1, which suits them much more. You need to get your wingers and Playa. This guy is a Playa. Playa hater, if you will. Not really sure what I did there with the caffeine, but I'm going to go with it anyways. But Playa could be one of their worst nightmares for a Bayern team. He'll be playing on that side against Benjamin Pavard, who teams that have had success against Bayern have circled his name on the tactic sheet and gone after him. And I think that's going
to
be the matchup to watch.
It's not fair to call Pavard weak, but he is the weakest link in this Bayern Munich side. Like, definitely when they don't have the ball. Right. Yeah.
I don't know about that. I mean, you guys know my thoughts on the sort of French contingent at the back for Bayern. I think overall as a unit, it definitely has some holes in it. I mean, the thing that I love about this Gladbach side is they've still got that Francophone contingent going. You've got Ben Sabani in defense. You've got Kone in midfield as well, very dynamic. It's no surprise that a lot of clubs across Europe are looking at some of those guys right now. To see Thuram in this kind of form, I think this makes a huge difference because, you know, we cast our minds back a season or so. Gladbach were turning up trees in the Champions League, surprising everyone. And then, you know, last season was kind of, you know, a bit of a wet fart in the end. And unfortunately, you know, didn't go the way that it could have gone with so much talent in that group. Didn't work out under the former coach, Adi Hütter, either. But now suddenly, you know, they kind of have this new lease of life. I know that things have changed behind the scenes at the club as well. And, you know, Gladbach Dortmund is one of the really traditional fixtures in the Bundesliga as well. So I think this is set up to be a really good challenge for Bayern in the same way that I was discussing with PSG Monaco earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I just give Pavard a hard time because he kind of gives me Screech vibes from St.
But the thing is, it's not easy to identify his best position in a defense as well.
Yeah, that's true.
He's definitely not a fullback. Yeah, and he's not an out-and-out.
I think that's what it is. I think that he's that type of player that his strength is his weakness because he's a utility man, but usually he's placed in a place that's not necessarily best for him. Yes, rest in peace, Screech. Absolutely, Des Norris. All right, let's focus here now. Well, that's it, actually. Yeah. It's our final thoughts now. Wow, we were having so much fun. I just, you know, just kind of 46 minutes gone by. But thank you, everybody. Our weekend preview. Make sure to follow us on Twitter and YouTube as well. Let's do final thoughts, everybody. Before we say goodbye, Jonathan Johnson, give me your final thoughts and why are Villa going to win 3-0 this weekend?
Well, you beat me to it. I'm just praying that you know, we get a good result against West Ham and we don't have to go through therapy together next week. But no, really exciting. And obviously this is recorded before the Champions League draw. So I'm keen to see who all the teams are going to be coming up against as well. So, you know, lots to look forward to about the next couple of weeks and wouldn't have it any other way than digging through it with you guys.
Absolutely. Michael Lahoud, final thoughts, buddy.
Yeah, I'll be up bright and early this weekend, and I hope I'm treated to something good. But I'm going to go to the other half of Manchester. City Palace, This is a really big matchup. I was going to choose it for my matchup, but I think the game sells itself, so I didn't need to choose it. I think this is just a big opportunity for Patrick Vieira to really cement himself as one of the best up-and-coming coaches in the Premier League. And I think they could take City's scalp and could be a big talking point. But keep your eyes on that game. I will be watching that game from start to finish.
Yeah, we were terrible last game, but Crystal Palace are an absolute force. And Eberechi Eze this season is going to light it up. I'm with you. I think that should be a fun game. Though Man City played a friendly this week against Barcelona. So I wonder if any heavy legs there, but I doubt it. But that's a great call there. But thank you, everybody, for being part of the family. Remember, as JJ said, and as our disclaimer sort of at the beginning, this is before a Champions League draw. But if you're listening or watching to this and didn't realize that we did a Champions League draw, make sure to check it out because we have the watch along as well as the reaction to it. So you can follow all of that on KeGolassoPod on Twitter, youtube.com/KeGolasso, at Mike LaHood, at John_LeGossip, at LM Echegaray. After the weekend preview, Champions League draw, etc., there's a weekend recap. I won't be part of it. I'm coming back to the US from Barcelona finally, but it's in between transit and Bad Bunny at Yankee Stadium's calling my name. So these boys will be taking care of it. But yeah, plenty more to come from KeGolasso. Thank you so much, everybody, for being part of the show. See you next time. Have a fantastic rest of your week. Enjoy the matches and the Champions League draw. Till then, bye-bye.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.